about a project conducted by myself and at least two members in the audience, Tamar Clayman and Kelly Littman. And what we did was we looked at medical care experiences of people who use drugs. And we did that in effort to help improve services at a community-based nonprofit organization, which I'll mention and tell you about in a minute. These are all the people who've been involved in some way in the project. And neither myself or any of my collaborators have any relationships to disclose. Okay. So the work that we conducted and that I'll talk about today occurred at Prevention Point Philadelphia, which was founded in 1991 as a grassroots community organization developed to reduce the spread of HIV in injection drug users in Philadelphia. Since that time, it's become a formal 501c3 nonprofit organization, and the services have evolved from distributing needles and syringes from the back of someone's car to having a very formal setting. And we still do mobile vans for both street-side health and syringe exchange. But in addition to syringe exchange, we have an overdose prevention program, HIV and Hep C screening, immunizations. There's a shelter in the winter. We have food distributions, linkage to substance use treatment, and other social services. And the one service that I will talk about more today is the street-side health program. So the street-side health program at Prevention Point utilizes volunteer medical teams from four of the city's medical schools. An attending physician comes out to each site and brings along with them residents or medical students. And they provide what we'll call low-threshold medical care for the clients who show up. And Prevention Point and its Streetside Health program are not really designed to be a formal primary care center. So when the Streetside Health program was initially started, we assumed that the clients who show up would lack health insurance and would not have a healthcare provider. And we also thought that they would have acute medical conditions like injection site wounds, abscesses, injuries. But what we've seen over the years is the problems which people appear with have changed. And we see more clients with insurance even before passage of the ACA. And we see more and more clients that are coming with issues related to chronic conditions like diabetes, asthma, hypertension, COPD, anxiety, PTSD, and pain. And also, interestingly, we've had a recent uptick in people showing up for services. They want a physical exam in order to be employed, so a physical for work, a physical for a driver's license, and also to have a physician complete medical assistance forms. So Prevention Point Philadelphia would like to expand its services, healthcare services, through the Streetside Health Program. What's happening right now with this influx of people with chronic conditions and people looking to have physical exams for reasons other than acute care means that not all of the people who show up for services can be seen on a given day. So we need to expand the services that we have, but we also want to improve the linkage of the people who have insurance to providers in the community so that they're not using this safety net situation that we have at Prevention Point. So what I'm going to talk about for the rest of this talk is the first step in efforts to improve the identification of healthcare providers in the community that are deemed acceptable to the clients and accepting of the clients. And we're going to explore the client's attitudes and beliefs about what is an acceptable and accepting provider. So in order to do that, we conducted and recorded 20 in-depth interviews. So they were semi-structured interviews with clients at Prevention Point. 15 were men, 5 were women, 10 were injection drug users, 7 were users of other drugs, not injection, sometimes opiates, sometimes not. And 3 that were not currently drug users, but were still coming to Prevention Point to seek services other than syringe exchange. And this is pretty indicative of the client base at Prevention Point. It's certainly more weighted towards men than women, more so injection drug users than not injection drug users, and about, you know, maybe 5 or 10% that come in without drug behaviors at the time. We recorded these, transcribed them, and we started looking at emergent themes and common themes which showed up about primary care and medical home relationships. So we did expect some of the clients to have had healthcare experiences in the last year. Many of them received some services at Prevention Point Streetside Health Program. There were many who visited the ER, sometimes frequently, sometimes just once or twice. There was some report of semi-regular mental health care, semi-regular primary care or subspecialty care, and a number that have had no care at all in the past year. Many of the subjects had Medicaid insurance, and either Prevention Point had assisted them in setting up that insurance, or other social service agencies helped them. But a majority of those with Medicaid reported that they had not seen the provider that was assigned to them or that they selected. All of the Medicaid services in Philadelphia, where this is taking place, is in managed care. So everyone is assigned a primary care provider. Most of them have never seen that physician, don't know who they are or where they're located. And when I asked why they don't see the primary care provider on their list, they either said they didn't choose them, they were assigned them, or they called and the wait time to get an appointment was too long, or just too cumbersome to make an appointment, and it was easier to come to Prevention Point. Then we moved into the part of the project that became quite difficult, and it spanned multiple graduate students working with me, and our initial interest in understanding their interactions with primary care providers was really hindered by the language barriers. We, the researchers, use a certain set of words, same words that get used by policymakers, insurers, other researchers, and medical home was a big one. So one of the students early on wanted to figure out how we can get a medical home situation set up for these clients. We realized very early on that the clients have no idea what we mean by a medical home. So that term was sort of out. So then we moved to primary care provider. And that term was also problematic. And they confused primary care, care coordinator, case manager, and other kind of healthcare providers. They also were very confused about the roles that the different professionals played in their lives. They mixed the responsibilities of physicians, psychologists, case managers, and other health and social service professionals. So as we were talking to them, we were never really sure that they were telling us about the primary care provider we were interested in knowing about. So here's some of the problems that we had with terminology. Just the term provider. So primary care provider. In this community, the word provider is often thought of as your insurer. So they rarely considered provider to be the person who delivers them a service. So we had to get rid of that term. Then we moved to just your doctor. And interestingly, same problem came up as my parents have, which is everyone who comes in to see them in a medical setting is now a doctor of some kind. Right? So your physical therapist is a doctor and introduces him or herself as doctor whoever. The occupational therapist, the nurse, is often a doctor at this point. And they don't really know who is the doctor, like who is their care provider. And it's also complicated by where some of these people do receive their services are often community health centers where nurse practitioners are often the primary care providers. And they don't necessarily introduce themselves as doctor. So just the term doctor now has become difficult for us to know that we're talking about the same person and the same situation that the clients are trying to communicate about. We moved to family doctor to maybe help them understand this primary care level of doctor we were interested in knowing about. And many of them would report back experiences about their childhood doctor. That was the last person they thought as their family doctor. So that term was sort of out. So we moved to medical caregiver that you would call or try to see when you're sick. And sick was a difficult term. So we found that they would often when you use the word sick, they mean sick related to their drugs, related to withdrawal. And they didn't really talk about being sick in any other way. They may have another problem, they may have a wound, they might have a broken arm, and they don't really refer to that as being sick. So one of our main questions was, what drives you? At what point, what is the tipping point when you decide that today I think I need to call and see my doctor? Using the word sick didn't help us get to that. The term usual doctor got the most traction, though these providers were often nurse practitioners. And interestingly, many of them thought of their usual doctor as their mental health counselor, so the psychologist that they see at maybe a community center or a drug treatment center. So again, we weren't necessarily talking about the same individuals. Okay. So once we tried to get past all of those issues, we got further along into some of the other themes that came up about decision making about health providers. And one of the recurrent themes was trust. And so that was noted in much of the literature we looked at, and we also saw it in our subject group. Interestingly, the hierarchy of trust, so they were concerned about the competence of their medical providers. They felt if these doctors were willing to treat people like them, they must not be very good doctors. So if they took Medicaid, they must be a worse doctor than if they don't. And if they're in a quote, bad neighborhood, they're maybe not as competent as the doctors that would be in another neighborhood. So that was a big concern. Confidentiality was a huge concern, and I'll talk a little bit more about that in a minute. They were also concerned about judgment, stigma, and prejudice, that they couldn't trust the doctor because the doctor wouldn't trust them because of stigma and judgment that may come with them being a drug user or a former drug user. They also had concerns that whether or not the providers were really committed to them as patients and to them as people. They did see a lot of movement in and out of the clinics where they would seek care, so they weren't really sure that the doctors were really there for them. In terms of trust, interestingly, providers in the emergency room were considered worst, least trustworthy of all of the providers that they interacted with. They considered confidentiality and stigma, so trust in providers about that, to be the worst in office staff members. So not necessarily the clinicians, but those who do your intake forms, those who answer the phone, those who, when you call, say, what is your problem, and you have to tell them your problem out loud before you get an appointment. And when you show up and they say out loud in the waiting room, what are you here for? They're concerned about that. They considered RNs better than the office staff, and they really reported no concern at all with physicians other than a little caveat about ER physicians. So they trusted them, they believed that they would hold their information and confidence, and they didn't judge them as much as the other providers did. Then within the community of drug users, once you took them from being just patients to patients with substance use issues, they had some self and group perceptions about that related to stigma and judgment. And they sort of had a hierarchy of judgment based on the kind and route of drug use. So prescription drug misusers were not so bad, they're just people who need a little bit of help. And then those who use street drugs are, quote, bad people. So these words in, I guess it's brown, orange, are quotes that came from the recordings. So street drug users are bad people. And then it gets worse, you're more bad as you go down the list from a marijuana user to a cocaine user to a crack or meth user to someone who snorts opiates. They're worse than just being bad people, and there's not much hope for them, but at least they're not injectors. Once you become an injector, you're the worst. Okay, no one wants to work with them or us. And that was sort of the perception that they had amongst themselves. When I asked about the medical care provider perception of these issues, do you think that the doctors and the nurses who care for people think about it in the same hierarchy? They reported yes. They assumed that that was true. So respect of them as people was another concern. So they were looking for providers who showed them some semblance of respect. They wanted to be treated as people, not just drug users. And they feel respected by, in decreasing order, their regular doctors, or no, in increase, yeah, decreasing order. Regular doctors, which is the term that we kind of got to regarding primary care, but not ER doctors, they're not part of that. Special doctors, so many of them had seen psychiatrists, those with diabetes had at one point seen endocrinologists or other diabetes specialists. They felt like they got some respect from them. Nurses in general, not in the ER, psychologists and case managers. ER doctors and nurses, again, were near the bottom, and office staff at the medical provider's office were at the bottom. So I asked a little bit more about this office staff interactions. I know I'm not thrilled with mine, and after listening to them, I started paying attention at my doctor's offices, and the front staff is often talking about people's health issues on the phone in front of other clients and patients, talking to me about my issues in front of other people. And the staff and the subjects were saying that the office staff people are people coming from my neighborhood. They know me. They're not professionals. They're not trained to do this. I'm not telling them my business, and I'm not going in there if something on my file that they're going to see is going to talk about my drug use, my HIV, my hepatitis, or whatever else might be an issue. However, those that had good, positive interactions with client staff were those who seemed to have the most interactions and most trust in their healthcare providers in general. Some of them knew the receptionist by first name and knew their phone numbers off the top of their head and could tell me things like this about Janet. Janet was wonderful, and I wanted Janet at my doctor's office. So in conclusion, I think one thing that the takeaway from this for me is that the clients there and all of us professionals who are working with them use different terms, and we mean different things. So while we may be talking to them about a primary care provider or medical home or their doctor, what's in their head is very different than what we're thinking they must be talking about. So I think we need to be careful and ask some more questions when we talk with them. A strong level of trust in physicians and nurses in general was pretty surprising to me. Other than the ER doctors, they always added that caveat that you can't trust them. They don't trust us, we don't trust them. And that the self and group perceived stigma and hierarchy about drug use and the route of drug use, I think really does lead injecting drug users to be less likely to seek care than other substance users. And prevention point is often used by the patients because of negative interactions they've had with other providers, and then the wait times and the medical office complications. So opportunities for prevention point as we move forward with this project and in building our services, we're looking to provide a harm reduction approach training to office staff members, not just the clinicians, which is what we've been doing in the past, and to help instill office staff with procedures that reduce the appearance or likelihood of privacy violations. And to help clients that come to Prevention Point recognize the roles of the various providers in their life. They're very confused by that. And then the next step in this is we're going to be talking to providers that were identified by clients and other providers in the community to learn about which ones are accepting of clients from Prevention Point so that we can eventually, we'd like to have a database that we can know a neighborhood, type of insurance that a doctor recommends, and the kinds of interactions that they've had with clients in the past. So we can send clients and help them develop good relationships with appropriate accepting healthcare providers. That's it. Do we have time for questions? Eventually, first we need to identify where they're going. So part of this project that I didn't talk about was we identified from the clients where they go so that we could get some docs that are frequently used or ones that are deemed acceptable already and the word gets out. That'll be down the line. Yes?
Hi,
Yeah. The comments that I didn't examine what did they do in that ER, and I haven't talked to the ER docs yet. That's also on the list of things to do in the future. When they talked about the ER with me, it was usually when they walked in, they either assumed that the doctors and nurses were approaching them as drug seekers, and maybe they did approach them as drug seekers, so there's the perceived and then there's the reality. But it seemed to be that those were the docs that couldn't get past them being drug users, especially injection drug users, and that every clouded sort of all of the conversation that they had, even if they were there with a broken, you know, visibly broken arm. At least the clients that we talked to felt that drug user was the top of the chart and everything else was secondary, and they didn't see them as whole people. They also talked about using the ER not quite as much about those acute situations, but when they couldn't get an appointment somewhere else. So they can't walk into the urgent care settings that are open because no one's going to take, at least they don't feel welcome, and they're not sure they'll take their insurance, and I'm not sure they'll take their insurance. So it was because they couldn't get in somewhere else, or because they didn't have another doctor, so that's where they went.